Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We'll kick things off, of course, in the Champions League and in Italy, where Inter sprung a bit of a surprise, beating Barcelona by 1-0. Gianluigi Strike proving to the difference between the two teams just before the break. A game with plenty of incident. Barca felt they should have had a penalty late on. It did look like it was a handball. However, nothing was given, and it leaves Barca in a bit of trouble now when it comes to qualifying out of the group. They sit third. Remember, they lost to Bayern as well earlier on in the group stages. They will take on Inter next week in what will be a huge tie for Xavi's side. Before on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Stuart Robson and Ali Moreno are with us. Craig, we weren't quite expecting that.
I was expecting a tight game, but I wasn't. And I was expecting Barcelona to dominate the stats, the possession. But I was expecting a bit more in the final third. That's what we've seen in La Liga. We knew Inter were going to be dogged because they've not had a great season so far domestically. We knew they would tuck the wing-backs in. It would be five at the back. They would bring people into the middle of the park. They would drop their strikers in. They would look to hit on the counter. But they didn't get enough service, good service to Lewandowski. And I thought Dembele did some good things, but I was saying to you during the game, he just overcomplicates it for me too many times. And I thought it was just a kind of dogged, solid, grinding out result that Simeone needed.
It was interesting, wasn't it, Ali?
This
was
Inzaghi, sorry.
This kind of felt almost a little Ronald Koeman-esque.
That's not a good thing, by the way, just in case you were wondering. That is not a good thing. What we saw from Barcelona today is essentially the same thing that we saw from them against Mallorca in the weekend, playing against a better team in Inter, with better players that can hurt you on the counter. Now, the slow possession of Barcelona, how much they just kind of walk the ball up the field and then eventually walk the ball across to Dembele for him to go in potentially 1v1 situations. But because you're walking the ball up, it was never 1v1. It was always 2v1. It was always Mkhitaryan and Di Marco who would bracket Dembele down the right-hand side. And then, to the point that Craig was just making, not only does he overcomplicate his decisions, sometimes you just can't make sense of his decisions. There are moments in which Ousmane Dembele can look like the best player in the world. And then there's a first half today where he looks like the worst player in the world. But, to be fair to him, he's the only player from Barcelona who's willing to take somebody on. We never saw anything going on from the left-hand side, which then limited Barcelona to everything happening down the right. It was easier to defend because then Inter would shift over. And we never, ever, ever, ever did we ever see runs coming out of the midfield. Late runs from out of the midfield with Gavi, with Pedri, guys breaking through lines and appearing inside the 18-yard box. So it all became services into the box that the center backs were already expecting, and they were just saying, all right, swing it in here, we'll come and attack the ball, clear the danger, and go on the counter.
It's interesting, Robert, despite all the possession that Barca had, you could argue that Ter Stegen was the busier of the two goalkeepers.
Yeah, he didn't have too many saves to make, but I thought Inter looked a threat on the counter-attack. And that goes back to what I've said on many occasions, that Eric Garcia made too many bad decisions. He got too tight to people. So when the ball was played forward, and the goalkeeper did that quite often, when Barcelona were trying to press, he just chipped it over the midfield areas into the front two. And Eric Garcia either gave away fouls or got rolled or made bad decisions. And Christensen, I don't think, is a particularly dominant centre-half either. So that was a problem for Barcelona. But going back to Ali's point and Craig's point, Inter said to Barcelona, yeah, you can have possession and you can allow it to go out to Dembele. And as Ali said, Mkhitaryan doubled up with Di Marco. When they played it back to Sergio Roberto, instead of him whipping the next ball in, he went played square. And I think Rafinha found himself in a position where he couldn't get at people because they played almost Alonso as the outside left and played three at the back at times. And Rafinha, I thought, should have gone out to the right-hand side much earlier on in the game. He's probably spent about 5 minutes there and then was taken off.
Where's this Inter side domestically, Robbo? They've lost four games already this season. They did everything and executed it really well today.
Well, they've got three centre-halves who I think are excellent players. And they haven't always played. Acerbi's been in the side instead of De Vrij in recent weeks. Skriniar, I think, is one of the best defenders in Europe. De Vrij is also excellent. It's been in midfield where they've struggled at times. And I thought they'd struggle today. Calhanoglu, as the holding midfield player, usually not a great defence attractive player. I thought did really well tonight. He made Barcelona go wide. Mkhitaryan, and you don't often say this, defended brilliantly in doubling up with Di Marco. And I thought Barella had one of his better games of the season. And the front two worked hard just to keep hold of the ball and allow Inter to get up the pitch. It's been a poor season for them so far. This might just kickstart their season.
Sometimes when you play these games, it brings the best out of you because you don't have a choice in the matter. You know that you're going to be dominated with possession, so your tactics are pretty much set out from the start. Where when they're playing some teams in Italy, they're asked to get on the front foot more and they're a little bit more open. Looking at how difficult they made it for Bayern created way more chances in the game against a better team in Bayern Munich because Bayern Munich were a more open side than Lewandowski. Had a normal night, Barca would probably have won that game. They created so many chances. Today, I can remember him having the odd header, I think it was. As Robbo says, those three centre-halves with Bastoni in there, big strong lad, they really made it difficult. And sometimes when you set your stall out from the start like that, it's a little bit easier to get a result.
Barca fans not happy, though, with the officials because it really did look like a handball from Dumfries, didn't it, Ali? And mysteriously, the ref didn't even go over to the monitor.
I have no idea what's going on with this system any longer, Dan. Why do we have it in place? If indeed there's an opportunity for the referee to actually go and take a look at the play himself, and we say, no, you know what? Actually, not worthwhile. Actually, not that big of a play. It doesn't really change what Barcelona may or may not potentially do in Champions League. Actually, yes, it changes all of those things. And so it would have been a moment in which, at the very least, allow the referee to go see the play. But even if you don't allow him to go to see the play, why wouldn't the VAR official look at this and clearly know that this is a handball? There is no way. Physically, just mere physics. Let's look at this from a scientific angle. If Ansu Fati is heading the ball this way, right? How then the ball ends up back this way? It becomes a simple physical explanation of Dumfries swinging his arm out of control, hitting the ball past Ansu Fati. It's a handball. Should have been a penalty.
Either hits to that point. It either hits Dumfries in the arm, which looks like the winner, not in the official's eyes, or it hit Ansu Fati in the shoulder. Because the ball changed trajectory, it changed direction. And so it hit one or the other. And unless the FIFA officials had some clarity from another angle that wasn't shown on TV that showed that it completely missed Dumfries' hand and hit Ansu Fati on the shoulder or the right arm and went in a different direction. For the life of me, we were sitting straight away. Yeah. We just said, that's going to be a penalty.
Yeah.
We were amazed when he didn't give it. I don't think we were the only ones because Xavi didn't look too chuffed.
No.
He wasn't chuffed all night anyway.
No, he called the referees out after the game saying they should come here and explain themselves.
Well, jobs are saved and lost, not this one, but, you know, over a long season, jobs come and go on big decisions on big games and big competitions. And for the life of me, unless somebody could, you know, if somebody could come out and clear this up and say, look, it wasn't given because here's an angle that shows it actually didn't hit the arm and it ricocheted off Ansu Fati, then we'll all take it back. But they won't do that because there probably isn't one.
Right. Xavi is indignant after the game, Rob. Is he right to be?
Absolutely. It looked a penalty. I saw two replays that were inconclusive. You couldn't quite see what happened. The third one, that was behind the Barcelona goal, you could see that it hit Dumfries on his hand. And Dumfries knew it as well by his reaction to throw his body in the opposite direction. He was looking all around. He knew he'd handballed it. It was a penalty, and Xavi's right to be upset about it.
Well, not given. And what that means, overall, Ali, Barca are in trouble.
Yes, they are in trouble. And now, when you think about important games in a season, their most important game coming up is not El Clásico. It is next week against Inter. Now, we have to, when we have this conversation regarding Barcelona and Champions League, we cannot get away from the fact that they've invested so much money that they didn't have, into this club, into this team for right now, to get results right now. They're not thinking about the future. If they were thinking about the future, they wouldn't have spent the money in the manner in which they did. And so they are banking on this version of Barcelona making a deep run in Champions League. What a catastrophe. What a disaster it would be for Barcelona and Xavi if they're unable to advance out of the group stage. So it all comes down, really and truly, to that matchup against Inter at the Camp Nou. It's a must win. There's nothing else, nothing to discuss. It's a must win for Barcelona. A whole lot of pressure on these players and this coaching staff to get it right.
And it's incredible, isn't it?
Well, and if you think it's going to be anything different next week, it'll probably be this game in the San Siro 2.0. I mean, it's going to be even more defending from Inter, even more backs to the wall. And as Robbo said, looking to have a really smart counter-attacking game. And that's going to be another test of how Barcelona break these teams down. And on tonight's evidence, they didn't do a very good job.
It's going to be a huge game next week, Robbo.
It certainly is. It's going to be a massive game. It's going to be a massive game against Bayern when Bayern come to Barcelona, because they're still going to need something from that game, probably, because already Inter are going to get 9 points out of this group without anything else.
I think the problem is that when you're trying to play on the front foot against the better teams, Inter in this group, obviously not Pilsen and Bayern, is that then you're asking questions of your defence.
Right.
Because you're exposing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we see Man City do it, we've seen Liverpool do it, and it's not worked too well for them this year. But we've seen these teams, these good attacking teams, they leave themselves exposed at the back to 2-on-2 or 3-on-2s or whatever it is, and they take that risk. You look at this back four, I know they've got one or two injuries, you look at this back line, you look at that holding midfielder in Sergio Busquets and his age, there's not a lot of protection there. There's a lot of sleepless nights in that defence for Xavi at the moment.
Do they get it done, Ali?
I think they do, but Xavi's going to have to make critical decisions. And for a long time now, I have been saying, and Stewie alluded to it, I've been saying that Dembele and Rafinha cannot be on the field at the same time unless you put Rafinha down the right. That's where he's most successful. Now, Dembele's most successful down the right side as well. We saw Rafinha against Tunisia with Brazil last week scored two goals coming from that right-hand side. He was lost today down the left. And Marcos Alonso doesn't really give you a credible threat down the left-hand side. So if you're Xavi, you're going to have to truly evaluate, how do I make myself or make my team have credible threats on both sides on the field so that teams cannot just skew everything, center everything, and kind of push everything to one side and make it predictable. You have to be able to attack down both sides. Barcelona was unable to do that today and made it a whole lot easier for Inter to defend. So the decision on what happens with Rafinha, the decision on what happens with Marcos Alonso, the decision as to what happens in terms of what you do out of the midfield, is Frank Kessie a better option for this sort of games? A guy that is actually willing to run inside the 18-yard box gives you an option on set pieces as well. Gives you an option on floated balls inside the 18-yard box if that's the way you're going to play. Xavi's going to have to get all of those decisions right, and then they're going to have to get productivity from Lewandowski if indeed he gets service.
I think Frank, you know, I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, I think Kessie gives that midfield a better balance. Pedri's obviously a sublimely talented, skillful player. Busquets experience, and Kessie, as Ali mentioned, a little bit of everything.
Right.
Can defend, can pass, tackle, get in the box, and he can score goals. I think Gavi at the moment, certainly in the last two games, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but he wants to fight everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
He's running around and he's getting in people's faces, and he did it at the weekend against Mallorca. I think I might have took him off at the weekend because he was going to get sent off. Took him off again tonight. He was charging after players. And he's a young guy, and I understand. But I just feel at the moment this midfield needs something a little bit different.
Did Barca get out of this group, Robbo?
I think they will. I think they're going to beat Inter next week. They'll beat Victoria Pilsen. And I think they might get something out of the Bayern game. And that should be enough if Bayern Munich beats Inter Milan. So I think they will get out of the group. They're good enough to get out of the group. It wasn't a good day today. I think Xavi will get it right next week. And they'll be in the stronger position.
It was a good day, though, for Bayern Munich as they thrashed, as expected, I suppose, Victoria Pilsen by 5-0. Leroy Sané getting a brace. Mané scored as well. Gnabry and Choupo-Moting late on to give Bayern all 3 points. What's interesting, Robbo, and we've seen it quite a bit this season, is Nagelsmann really getting a tune out of Sané at the moment.
Yes, Sané didn't have too many touches early on in the game, and suddenly he came infield and hit a great shot with his left foot. He opened the score and he made another good run for the second goal. He was playing on the right-hand side, but he often came in field to join in with the front players. Sane, yeah, had a good game, but so did most of the front players. Gnabry was playing as the main centre-forward. Malassi was playing just... Masiala was playing just in behind him. And Mane was playing on the left-hand side, making those diagonal runs. There was a lot of rotation. We kept asking, you know, how would they score goals when Lewandowski went? And they haven't played particularly well in the Bundesliga so far. But today, they were excellent. Their movement was really good. Their one- and two-touch play. Their understanding where the next play was going to be was really good. And Goretzka from midfield tried to dominate the game.
As expected, I suppose, though, Ali, considering the opposition.
Yeah, you would expect it, certainly, from Bayern Munich carrying the momentum from their big win against Leverkusen after having been winless in four in Bundesliga. They destroy Leverkusen and they continue that today. I think what was critical today for Nagelsmann is the fact that no Joshua Kimmich, no Thomas Müller due to COVID, no issues whatsoever. This team... 20 minutes into the match, the game was over, and it was all about what they were able to do in the attacking half. And I think looking into the future for Bayern Munich, what was also critical is that because the game was over by halftime, then you're taking Musiala off at halftime, you're taking Alphonso Davies off at halftime, you're taking players off because you have the big game, their Klassiker, against Borussia Dortmund this weekend. This was as good as it could have been for Bayern Munich. Easy, game set match, everything was done by halftime, and after that, it was simply a training session.
Bayern Munich, then, as Ali said, next up for them is the Klassiker, which, of course, is live on ESPN+. Stuart Robson on the call for that game. Coverage starts at 12:30 Eastern. So, well, of course, as well, all the other Bundesliga matches this weekend, a full programme of games in La Liga. Barcelona taking on Celta Vigo. It'll be interesting to see how Xavi goes into that game, considering it is Inter and then Real Madrid for his side in the next two fixtures.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A comfortable win for Liverpool at Anfield as they beat Rangers by 2-0, put them back to winning ways, of course, after that disappointing result at the weekend. Alexander-Arnold with a brilliant free kick would open the scoring in the 7th minute, and then a Salah penalty 8 minutes into the second half would give them the victory. And let's just take a look at what that means overall in the group. Napoli thrashed Ajax by 6-1. In the Netherlands, they remain top of the table, perfect after 3 games. Liverpool move up to 2nd, Ajax 3rd, Rangers still yet to register a point. Steve Nicol is with us. Stevie, sum this game up for us.
It kind of went exactly the way it was supposed to, other than maybe we expected more goals from Liverpool, but no surprises. Completely dominated the game. I mean, it took Rangers 85 minutes to actually get Alisson to make a save in the game. It should have been out of sight at half-time. Nunez probably, well, maybe could have had a hat-trick in the first half. McGregor made 3 saves from him. Shots that were on target, but had they been placed better, they would have been in the back of the net. So this was a performance that we expected. They dominated. They'll be disappointed Liverpool they didn't score an open play. The two goals came from set pieces. As you said, an incredible free kick from Alexander-Arnold, top corner, and then a penalty kick. So if there was one thing that you would be disappointed in, or Klopp would be disappointed in, is that they didn't take any of the chances that they made in open play. But at the end of the day, it's 3 points, it's a win, and as I said, they dominated from start to finish.
It's a perfect tonic, really, for Liverpool's currently struggling defence, because they didn't really have to do much, as Stevie said, until later on in the second half. Unfortunately, it's a Rangers team that brilliantly got to the Europa League final last year, narrowly lost, but this is a step up, just too much for them in terms of quality, and it's shown. And had this been anything other than a victory for Liverpool, it would have been pretty much a disaster for them, bearing in mind how they've started the season. So, yeah, the only disappointing thing from their point of view is they'd have been looking for 4 or 5.
Right.
And it should have been.
Right. And it should have been, as you say, Stevie, because Nunez had chances. Cause for concern?
No, I think what we're seeing from Nunez is he's still a bit off the finished article. And probably the biggest thing would be his finishing. Because in the games that he's played since he's got to Liverpool, he's actually had chances. But I would probably question his composure in front of goal. Because when you have that composure, then you can pick your spot. And I think right now, he's going for power as much as anything else. So he's still learning. He's still learning his trade. I think Klopp knows that. I don't think it's a surprise to him. You know, the money they paid for him, I'm pretty certain they did it, because had they not done it when they did, somebody else might have come in and gotten or taken him. So, you know, you've got to understand the kid's learning. He's definitely going to be way better than he is right now. But right now, he's still a handful. As I said, he's getting on the end of chances, and he just doesn't have that little edge, that little bit of composure right now to take advantage of them.
A little bit of redemption for Alexander-Arnold after a tough month, TV.
Yeah, the free kick, 100%. Yeah, I mean, it was a good game for him to play as well, because obviously Rangers weren't going to ask too many questions of Liverpool defensively, and that gave him time to get forward, and he played, what, 4 or 5 brilliant balls into the box. Things that we just have taken as normal for Alexander-Arnold. And as I said, the free kick was the cherry on the top. So, yeah, it was a good performance from him, but it was a perfect game for him to get the ball and get playing and get some confidence. And by the end of the game, when he came off, standing ovation, smart move from Klopp, a minute to go, bring him off and get the crowd into it and get behind him. So it's a good night, definitely, for him.
But he's got to be switched on. We know his crosses and his set pieces and his corners and his free kicks, and his general delivery from open play is as good as anybody's in that position. But we also know he's not been alone, but he's had a tough time. And there's a big game at the weekend, Arsenal. They play with two natural wingers, Saka and Martinelli. They're fast. They like to run at defenders. They like to run in behind. They've got good movement, Arsenal, with Jesus up front and Odegaard floating around. So it gives defenders questions about positioning. And that's going to be another big test for him if he plays, and I'm sure he is. So that's going to be the acid test again for him at the weekend, because he's going to have a team that are on the front foot, and he's going to have natural wide players up against him.
We saw Klopp afterwards talking about the fact that he's gone to this 4-2-3-1, Stevie, to add a little bit more protection to the defence and Alexander-Arnold.
I think you have to say it's a smart move. He's actually learned from, you know, I'm trying to remember, what, 18 months ago, I think it was, Liverpool lost 6 in a trot at home. We're kind of going through pretty much what we've seen recently, and he never changed a thing. And it took a long time to get out of the funk. So I'm glad to see, and it certainly looks like he's rethinking what he's doing. But I'm still not convinced that he's going to turn up against Arsenal and play 2-3-1 or 4-2-3-1. I think he may go back to type. I hope he doesn't. I think it's a smart move, because there's no question right now Liverpool's defence needs some cover, and that has to be the priority right now. You know, don't lose any goals. You don't lose any goals with the attacking players you have. If you have to seek a goal, you can do it. But don't play open and let a team like Arsenal get after you. So I hope he sticks to that at the weekend with a 4-2-3-1. I personally don't believe he will, but I guess we'll find out.
Why wouldn't he, Stevie?
Well, because he's a little stubborn. And I think when you play on the face of it, people can say, right, you're playing two in front of the back four, which means you're having two players to protect the back four. I think he's looking at playing two so he can get four forward early because they're playing against Rangers. I think this has got to do with the opposition. And we knew that Rangers weren't going to cause too many problems, which they didn't. And of course, it was all about attacking. And so that's why he plays Nunez and Jota and Diaz and Mo Salah. Do you think he's going to play those four against Arsenal? I don't think so. I think he's going to go back to what he thinks they know best. And that's 4-3-3. So, listen, hope I'm wrong. I don't think so, though.
Thank you very much, Stevie. Stevie back with us for Extra Time, which, as always, you could check out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Elsewhere in the Champions League, it finished Eintracht Frankfurt 0, Tottenham 0. When you take a look at how the group stands, it's not actually too bad a result for Antonio Conte's side, considering what else happened. Marseille with the victory over Sporting. I mean, it's tight in Group D. Spurs currently sit second, two adrift of Sporting at the top. Craig, if you didn't see this game, you kind of think, 0-0, not very good. But it was, wasn't
actually
it?
If you did see it and you know how Tottenham play a little bit more defensive, shall we say, try to be nice, particularly with the players they've got, this was an unbelievably exciting game.
Yeah.
I mean, how the hell it was still 0-0. I mean, Frankfurt had chances, Tottenham had chances. Every time we were watching two or three games, every time we looked up, Perisic was throwing a step over, crossed it in the box, they were clearing it off the line. It was a super exciting game. Heung-Min Son again, bit hot and cold. He had that hat trick coming off the bench. Then weekend again when he played against Arsenal, bit iffy. Had chances in this one again, and just he's not getting it done. Put it that way in the final third. But not a disaster. Certainly not a disaster from Tottenham's point of view, because Frankfurt are a good attacking side. But I don't think we'll see too many Tottenham games in that manner.
They'll be that open.
That'll be that open. That'll be that exciting. Because he wants to do it a different way, Antonio Conte. He wants to do it with more solidity and a more counter-attacking game. This was just two teams going head-to-head, and it was a good watch.
Destiny now very much, of course, in their hands. They beat Eintracht Frankfurt next week, and they're very much in the driving seat to qualify.
That's a big if. That is a big if. This Eintracht Frankfurt team won the Europa League for a reason. They're a more than decent side. They play good football. They like to get forward. And I think we'll see Tottenham revert to type next week,
right,
at home, which sounds a bit strange.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'll want to do that two games in a row. So I think we'll see them revert to type. And I think it's a close call. I think it's a close call because Eintracht could go there and win.
Meanwhile, in Group B, a bit of a surprise there. Another bad showing in Europe for Atletico Madrid as they lost against Bruges. Bruges then perfect. It's going to be a big battle, isn't it, between Porto, Bayer Leverkusen and Atleti as to who will qualify to the knockout stages. Porto got their first win of the round as they beat Bayer Leverkusen by 2-0.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Stevie and Robbo will be back, of course, alongside Craig to answer your questions in extra time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your questions. Craig Burley with us, Robbo here as well, Stevie still recovering. Stevie, thank you very much for the chocolate you left in your desk drawer for us. That was much appreciated.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Oh, isn't that
Dairy Milk, Dairy Milk chocolate orange.
Yeah, we didn't touch the chips though, did we?
No, we left his chips.
That was the worst.
We left his chips in the drawer, but the chocolate orange was sat out on top in a Ziploc bag, and it
well,
just.
Well, I'm
said,
off chocolate.
Please.
You've done me a favour, so.
Oh,
yeah,
there
do,
you are.
To be fair, you do look like a man who is off chocolate.
We get stuck in his beard.
It's Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls.
What?
Is it Bear Grylls?
Grylls. There's a man who lives in the wild, look.
Craig.
Bear Grylls. He doesn't even have a beard.
Craig, for United to go back to City and Liverpool level, how many players do they need to sell from the first team?
Sell?
Yeah.
Sell?
Yes.
Well, to get to City's level, they would have to sell.
Well, who'd you keep? That's kind of the, that's an easier question to ask, isn't it?
Who'd you keep? Well, Casemiro's not getting the game.
Right.
At the moment, but he will. I mean, I'd keep. I mean, keep the. I don't know. I mean, I'd keep Fernandes. I'd keep Eriksen.
Right.
I mean, I'd get rid of Ronaldo.
Yep.
I'd get rid of Wan-Bissaka if I could. I'd get rid of Shaw. I'd get rid of Maguire. I mean, the list is endless.
Right.
Fred. I mean, that's a lot. There's probably at least 10 that have to get rid of and replace to get to that level.
So would you get rid of Fernandes and keep Eriksen instead?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that, Stevie.
Aye. Yeah, no. Aye, that's what I'm thinking.
Who do you keep, Robert?
Keep Sancho, we keep Antony on the left.
The trouble is, if you get rid of all these players, you've got to go and buy somebody. That's the key to it. Yep. You've got to go and buy better players. And at the moment, Manchester United aren't buying better players, or haven't done. But there's not too many that you think for to get to the level of Manchester United and get to the level of Liverpool. Not many of those players that are playing at the moment can play in this Manchester United team and take them to that next level. So they need new players in, maybe, and that might inspire one or two of the better players, like Sancho, if he rediscovers his form that he played at Borussia Dortmund.
I'm not going to mention names.
Right.
I'm not going to mention names, but I reckon 2 years ago, we were told that there were a couple of players, United were a couple of players away from challenging him.
That was Danny Higginbotham.
Name names.
Well, we can name names. It's not a secret.
Right. Danny and I had a discussion, and I was a slightly different view to they needed just a couple of players.
That was when they finished second, wasn't it?
And they needed a bunch of players, a manager.
Right.
I think the line was they don't need a rebuild, they need a couple of players.
There you go. Stevie laughing to himself. Robert, when you look back and remember Messi dragging much worse versions of Barcelona to the Champions League knockout stages, isn't it a no-brainer to bring him back so he can paper over the cracks whilst Barca are still putting their house in order?
Ooh.
It's, of course, the prominent Argentinian journalist tweeting out that July 1st, 2023, Messi will be a Barcelona player.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, I would say. He'll be another year older. He's a different sort of player now. He's not going to run past people and score magnificent goals by beating three or four players. He's a brilliant passer of the ball. Would it change the way Xavi would try and build the side? I think it probably would. He's trying to promote those youngsters. He's trying to promote wide players with a bit of pace. He's got Lewandowski there. Of course, Messi would make them slightly a better team, but would he change the whole dynamic of the team? And Xavi probably wouldn't want that. So, in my view, I wouldn't take him back.
He's yet to make a decision, reports are suggesting. He won't address it till next year, Stevie. If you were Messi, would you want to go back?
Well, you always think you can go... You probably always think you can go back somewhere and just... It'll just click and it'll be like old times. Unfortunately, the number of times that a player has tried that, and you just got to look at Ronaldo, a number of times players have tried that and it hasn't worked out. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head one that did work out and I can't come up with any. So I would think, if I'm Messi, just leave it the way it is. Ian Rush, right, there's one. See, there's always one. Well, the difference is, Rush, he was 28, I think, when he came back. It's a little different than being, what, 35, 36? So, no. I think Messi should leave everything they did at Barcelona the way it is and don't go back and spoil it. Because Ronaldo's... Right. For me, Ronaldo spoiled a little bit of his legacy. You know, the fact is he's sitting his backside watching. People are going to remember that.
Is Craig willing to sponsor Stevie's shave?
Yes.
I thought you were going to go to a barber, Stevie, and get it sorted. Frank was going to pay for you.
I told you yesterday, my face is all... It's all...
Jesus. Cold hair.
Spots and stuff.
Right.
I don't know whether it's the medication I was on, but I couldn't do it the new anyway because I'd cut all me... All the spots and everything would be all thingy. Listen, I don't like having this. I'd rather get rid of it. But I can't do it then. You can't see it.
I've got to say.
You can't see it.
I've got to say,
what a lovely view.
It's all spoiled.
I had a worse shock than that. On Monday, I was working at BT, and in the foyer, they've got a massive screen there showing some of their stations. And on the station, as I walked into the foyer, was ESPN FC, and on the big screen there was Stevie at home with that beard. Oh my God, goodness, what a sight it was.
I mean, it is a mess.
Fortunately, we couldn't hear it. That was the main thing.
There's nothing I could do about it.
Well, you could shave with your what arm's he got?
He's got his left arm, isn't it?
Shave with his right.
Yeah, but he's got his spots now.
Oh,
spots.
That's what I'm saying.
You
I can't.
The spots.
Spots. Stevie, can we see the spots again?
Have a nice close up of the spots. Robbo.
The answer is yes, I would.
Right, okay.
Just to see that man.
Oh my God. Jesus. Don't fall over, Stevie.
Imagine he fell over and did his other shot.
The other one.
Oh God, that would be fun.
How are you sleeping at the moment? You sleeping well?
Oh, brilliant, aye. Getting up. If getting up every 3 hours is sleeping well, then I'm having an absolute great time.
Robbo, did analysts overhype Barcelona's revolution under Xavi and Lewandowski's goal scoring? Barca lost both the matches where they came across a good team.
Have we all overhyped their sort of revolution under Xavi? They've done much better, obviously, in La Liga because they were struggling when he took over, and now they're joint top with Real Madrid. They haven't lost this season in La Liga. Two games, though, against Bayern Munich and Inter, a poor Inter side at the moment in Serie A. Lewandowski couldn't find any room. Dembele had a bad day at the office. Rafinha couldn't get involved in the game. So maybe they're going to have some off days until they get everything absolutely right. They're still going to challenge for La Liga. I still think they're going to get into the knockout stages of the Champions League. Let's wait and see what they do come the end of the season.
Final question for Craig. Is Chelsea's home game against AC Milan a must-win, considering they'll be playing away against Milan and Salzburg in their three remaining fixtures? They sit bottom of the group at the moment, just 1 point.
Well, in that case, I'm trying to rack my brains here to see where they were. Probably, yes. Mm. Probably. But I mean, it was important for Potter to get that win at the weekend just to get off and running, but it's been a tough time for him to come in, isn't it? You know, with the international break and the players going away and blah blah, had that Champions League game to start with, but he was just in the door. So yeah, I mean, but his team selection will be interesting again, but he's not frightened to make big decisions, so yeah, I would say pretty much a must win for him.
That's it. We're done. Thank you very much, Stevie. Go and start your spots. We'll be back tomorrow to reflect on that game between Chelsea and Milan. Be sure to join us.